Welcome to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Here you are. You and I are going to do this.
Yeah.
You're going to do most of it. I might ask a few helpful questions.
Yeah.
But start out. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and I'm on my own this morning with Mike in the studio. Had a couple of different guests lined up for the next couple of weeks. That's kind of how I tend to do it. I have kind of a lineup of folks, and you know, this pandemic is getting a lot of people. And anyway, so here we are. I wanted to talk about a couple of things. We had a landowner mixer this weekend. Farmland Trust hosted some landowners in a gathering. We spoke about conservation easements at length. We talked about our Farm Link program, which connects land seekers with landowners. We had a tax lawyer on hand with us.
Oh, wow.
Which he has forgotten more about tax law than I ever want to know, but really valuable resource. Also, USDA, NRCS, Jackie Craigle, the head of the ASEP program, and Eric Johnson from the State Division of Agriculture. And we gathered and we spent 3 hours talking about this process. But one of the things that I mentioned to those landowners is, like, does anybody remember the first time they took swimming lessons? The first day you go to swimming lessons, you don't also race in a swim meet, right? An introduction to conservation easements is kind of like the first day of swim lessons, right? I'm going to show you where the pool is. I'm going to teach you or introduce you to your swim instructor. But it's the, you know, you're just putting your toe in the water. Conservation easements, it's a big, complicated kind of, you know, I'm 6 years in and I'm still learning every day something new about it. So anyway, if you are a landowner in the Mat-Su or beyond and you missed that mixer, or that sounds like something that you'd like to participate in, we think that we'll start having these quarterly because there are enough landowners with interest in our programs, but it really takes this kind of dive. You know, we kind of have to get into the nitty-gritty details to really help folks understand the process. So that was exciting. It was a good afternoon, yeah.
So I'll cue off that reference to say that over the last month or so, I've had conversations with a couple people about the option of doing a land easement, ag easement on their property.
Yeah,
they're not looking to sell their property in the near future. But the question that I think has probably come up with others, and it's so difficult to answer, is what's the risk here? What's the if you have a certain amount that's determined to be appropriate for your property to put it into an ag easement, and you go down the road and you say, well, if I had not done that, what would I have been able to sell this for?
Right.
And is there any way, given the changing values of properties and so on, to even provide a kind of a, oh, maybe even a look back to say, are there any properties that you can look back at and say they are now valued for development purposes at a certain level and,
sure,
and for ag purposes at another level?
Yeah.
Know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's actually, that's a new thought for me in what you just mentioned. It might be valuable for us at the trust to go back with the properties that we have protected,
right,
and see how their value has changed since protection.
Got it.
That would be interesting. But let me say this. The first question that I ask a landowner when they call me or they come into my office and they say, well, tell me about conservation easements. You know, let's talk about this. My very first question is, is your goal with your property permanent protection or maximum value extraction?
Okay.
Because if your goal is to get the most money out of your land, cash, as possible, a conservation easement is not likely going to be the answer. Mm-hmm. But if your goal is what's most important to you is that land stays in agriculture forever, then let's talk about a conservation easement. And let's be really clear, you are going to get a significant cash value out of your land. We're not asking you to give up your development rights for nothing. You are paid a significant amount of money.
Right.
Not the full fair market value. That's not what we're going to give you. We're not going to give you the same amount that a developer would give you. But we are going to give you a significant cash, a significant amount of cash. If you so choose, you're going to benefit from a significant charitable donation to a nonprofit, which can count towards your taxable income for the next 15 years. And you still own your land. So you could then still sell it and gain more cash, right?
Right.
So
right. With that easement restriction.
Yeah.
So it's not a simple formula.
No.
And of course, it's like much of what we do when we're talking about money and investment. Circumstances change.
Yeah.
And are you at a point where development is too costly for people to do when you particularly want to sell or
right.
one thing or another?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's complicated also by the factor that when the appraisal, the two appraisals are done on your property in order to determine what the value of the conservation easement is, that's a snapshot in time, right? It's
right.
today. We're determining what the value is today, and yet we're placing that conservation easement on the land forever. And so, you know, that is a complicated formula, and it is something that folks have to, like, you know, they have to be willing to accept that it's one value today.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it isn't right for everyone. And, but I would encourage anyone who's even slightly interested to, you know, give us a call, check out our website, akfarmland.com, look at the resources, particularly, under the protecting your land section of the website, and, do a little bit of homework. The second question that I'm going to ask you, if you're an agriculture landowner in the Mat-Su Borough and you come to see me, first I'm going to ask you about that extraction of value or permanent protection. What's your goal? Because I can still work with you if your interest is maximum value extraction. I still want to work with you, possibly. But my second question is going to be, how did you acquire the land? And does your land already have state agricultural covenants on it or Mat-Su Borough agricultural restrictions on it? We need to talk about that as well. So anyway, the other point that really came out clearly from our meeting this weekend with landowners, and was something that I want to stress to any agricultural landowner in the Valley and again beyond, is there is an extreme amount of interest right now, obviously from developers. You know, 43% of the state's new homes were built in the Mat-Su last year, right? People
right.
are flocking to the Mat-Su, pun intended. But also, there's a tremendous amount of land seekers. There's this surgence of folks looking for land to expand their agricultural production. And so if you're not farming all of your existing land, if you're interested in renting, leasing, or passing on your land to the next generation of farmers, and you just don't know how to get started on that, that's where our FarmLink program come in. And a couple months ago, weeks ago, I introduced Phoebe Autry on the show, our new lands coordinator, and it's her full-time job to try to connect landowners and land seekers. And we have some really excited land seekers right now with cash in hand that are looking for ag lands. So,
okay.
Yeah, want to stress that point.
Very good. So, it's winter.
Oh.
It's come back. There was that strange period of time and so on. And I'm curious, it sounds like you're doing some foundation laying with having these a tax attorney and informational out there. In your experience, when do people during the year really approach you? Is it evenly spread, or is it in the summertime when they're looking at their fields?
Yeah, well, an unfortunate piece of this pie, Mike, is that folks think of the trust when they're in a highly stressed situation.
Ah.
When someone is ill.
Got it.
When a family member has passed away, when a group of heirs gets together to decide what to do with dad or mom's property. That's why we're having these landowner mixers and why we're hoping to get in front of folks before those stressed situations, because we don't want you to be making a permanent and forever deal on your property when you're in a highly stressed situation, right? We want to be having these conversations well in advance.
Sure.
We'd love you to have your documents in order and be considering all of your options for how you pass on your property. And so there isn't necessarily a time of year when folks come to us, but I would say what we've seen over the past couple of years is that it's when there's a big tax bill due, or there's a balloon payment, you know, for the property due or something. It's in those stressed situations.
Okay.
And let me be clear in my response that we're not a snap of the fingers answer to those types of problems. Our process takes time. If we're going to permanently protect your property, there's a lot of due diligence that happens along the way. And it can take 2-3 years for this process. We're doing all we can to speed up that process, but it's slow. And so it's a really good idea to get with us well in advance of when you might be in one of those situations where you need to make a quick decision.
Would you say that as time has gone on, and we're looking at what you've already referred to is a bit of pressure on the valley
for
development, that this has this kind of, and the realization that there's this pressure by many landowners.
Yeah.
That there's a kind of a changing attitude toward ag easements. I'm talking a generality here because, you know, when weather is good, or you're happening to be a productive farmer who's using the property and things are going well, that's one thing. But in addition to personal acute incidents that happen with some family, you have the general thing of, we've had a couple of really good years here, so things are moving along. And if there's not much general pressure overall, that's a different circumstance than when weather's been really bad.
Right.
We've had some bad crops and so on.
Yeah. I'm not sure. What I can say is that there's intense interest right now. Is that because, you know, the last 6 years we have been aggressively advertising this option, and now folks are, you know, they've heard it a couple times,
right,
and they think, okay, I need to go in there and talk to the trust. Is that also, I really think what plays into it is just, you know, it's 2021. If you go back 40 years ago, there were some significant land sales happening in the 80s in Alaska, right? A lot of land was disposed in the 80s and a lot of agricultural land. And a lot of those farmers that got onto land in the 80s are now approaching retirement.
Okay.
That's a big piece of it, I think, too. But I also think, you know, and you've been here a lot longer than I have. This valley has changed dramatically in the last decade.
Oh, yes.
When you drive the Springer system, when you drive Farm Loop, when you drive anywhere in, particularly on the Palmer side, but also over in Wasilla, there's a lot more people here than there were, you know, 16 years ago when I moved to Alaska. And I think people are feeling that. The farmers are feeling that pressure. They're noticing their neighbor farms disappear, and they're thinking, man, we got to make some decisions here, you know. Do we want to cash out and see the farm covered in houses, or do we want to figure out a solution for permanent protection? So I think it's a combination of things, and certainly the stresses of the seasons and the markets and, you know, potential climate change and what is happening here. I think all of those things add into it, but I don't think we can discount, you know, Farmland Trust is a lot better known now than it was 6 years ago. And just the turnover, there's a big transitioning happening in landowners right now.
So in the past, we've had some discussions about the role that the state plays in supporting agriculture.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the governor, in his fourth State of the State address, included a strong reference to food security.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see from your context and as you look at this next legislative session, where there appears to be funding for a variety of things, support for agriculture that would be a positive for the kinds of programs you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, my first response is, geez, it's about time.
Okay.
When the governor was elected, his budget included eliminating the Division of Agriculture, darn it. And thankfully, that didn't happen. But I'm really glad to see that now he talks so aggressively about supporting agriculture and this state becoming more food secure. And I hope that it's not just talk. I will say this, and I kind of wanted to chat about this morning anyways. His administration through DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, they have introduced new language to allow for the legal sale of raw milk. And he has framed this as a food security issue. So listeners, and you might recall that, you know, over the last couple of years, we've worked really hard on the Free the Cheese movement, right? House Bill 22 that did become law last year. And that allowed for herd share dairy operators to turn their fluid milk into other value-added products for their shareholders to purchase. Cheese, yogurt, butter, etc. There was so much interest and support for that bill that some folks went to the governor and to the legislature and they said, hey, wait a minute. If people want raw milk so bad, let them have raw milk. Why don't we just open up the sale of raw milk so people can get it anywhere? They don't have to be herd share members. Mm-hmm. Now, those of us that were supporting the herd share bill, we said, whoa, 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 wait, time out. Two completely different topics. Like, if I'm a herd share member owner, I own a portion of that animal. I visit the farm. I know my farmer very well. We have a contract between the two of us, and there are rules in place, and it's very specific and clear, and it's worked for many years. Legal sale of raw milk at farm stands, farmers markets, anywhere is kind of a whole different topic. So it was kind of shut down last year during the legislative session, and we focused on passage of HB 22. But now the governor has, or the governor's administration through DEC, has proposed new legislative language to allow for legal raw milk sales. And there's confusion amongst the people. People think that they're changing the herd share rules to be much more strict about legal raw sales of milk. That's not what's happening. Herd share is going to remain the same. What the governor is proposing is new access to raw milk through this new avenue. And so I just want to be really clear with folks that if you are a raw milk consumer, if you are involved in the dairy industry, if, you know, any of the above, really anybody involved in food and agriculture should take a look at those proposed regulations and comment. The comment period, I believe, is through February 22nd. There's a lot of really good information on the DEC's website. And it's an opportunity to voice your opinion. You know, some folks are adamantly against raw milk sales to the general public because there's food safety concerns, right? Folks that sign up for a herd share relationship have direct contact with their producer and they know a lot about their producer. There's that one-on-one, you know, every single ounce of milk that leaves a herd share program, that farmer and producer knows exactly where it went. And they can contact the person. The person can contact them if there's any issues. If we go down the avenue of legal raw milk sales on the open market, it's a whole different world. You know, like if your milk is available in grocery stores, say, or at the farmer's market, you don't write down the name of every single person that purchased a gallon of milk, right? So it's a different world. But I just want to be clear about that. There's been some confusion about the two situations. Folks thought that herd share was going to be impacted by this new proposed regulation. It's not. It's two separate pieces of the law. So anyway, but I would encourage folks to go take a look at it and consider voicing your opinion and letting your member of the legislature or the governor's office know how you feel about this and whether that expansion of food access should be allowed or not.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska, and having a discussion with Amy Pettit, Executive Director of the Alaska Farmland Trust. You mentioned the Division of Agriculture in passing, and I'm thinking back to the 80s when there was a lot of work being done at the location that Jody Anderson now supervises at the Experiment Farm.
Yeah.
Potato Bill was out there, was doing a lot of work. We've also had some extensive work done with seeds and so on.
Grains,
all of these kinds of support infrastructure for farmers in a general way, not subsidies, but a very, very
research
and all the rest of that. That, in my understanding, declined over the years.
Rapidly, yeah.
And I guess I'm wondering whether there's an opportunity with the university or what the governor is talking about here to come back with more of that.
Yeah.
And do you see any of that happening?
I'm super hopeful. I think Jody's on the radio kind of regularly once a month.
Right.
I don't know if she's mentioned yet that she does have a cooperative agreement with the feds to bring back a couple of soil scientists there on the farm doing research work, which is phenomenal and very desperately needed. One of the problems or things that happens, unfortunately, is what we need is people. We need positions. We need boots on the ground. We need folks doing the research. And yet sometimes administratively, folks like to say, well, we're all about smaller government. And we don't, you know, people get excited when they see government growing and positions being added to the Division of Agriculture. And folks can get frustrated about that and start pointing fingers and just saying, you know, you're growing government. It's too big. Well, the research doesn't happen without a human body, you know? And so if we want to get back to those days of 20 researchers at the experiment farm and, you know, an additional 10 or 15 out at the State Division of Agriculture Plant Materials Center, we've got to have people. And so I'm hopeful that with some of this money that's coming into the state and with the budget seeming to be in a better place, that they will stand up the Division of Agriculture with funded positions, long-term funded positions. Because the other thing about research is oftentimes those folks, they can go out and they can get grant money for an individual project for a couple of years of research. But a couple of years is not enough. You know, we need extensive, you know, the growing season can be very different one year to the next. We need a decade of research to be able to say this is the best variety of broccoli for the state of Alaska or, you know, whatever it is. But I'm hopeful that they will fund some permanent positions both at the State Division of Agriculture and continue to foster the relationship with the federal government to keep bringing in those federal researchers and those federal dollars. The Agriculture Research Service used to have an entire office in Alaska with multiple researchers, and when they pulled out probably within the last 10 years, it's a huge detriment to the industry. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that they start bringing back some of those positions and some of that research.
And I would guess that whether you're going down to Washington State or to Iowa or any other state with a strong agricultural presence, you'll find that support in
absolutely
research,
yeah. Right? ARS, USDA Agriculture Research Service, is in every other state except Alaska right now. I'm the first one to brag about all these ag statistics, right? We're leading the nation in new farmers. We're leading the nation in the number of new farms. We're leading the nation in all these agricultural statistics. And we have the least amount of research happening and the least amount of paid probably government positions. Like that, those things don't balance out. We have to support the industry with that infrastructure at the government level. And I'm not like a proponent for a huge government either. You know, I was a government employee for a decade. I understand, you know, that there can be efficiencies, but if we want to support the industry with research and market development and these types of things, we need that government support for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here so far. We have a few minutes left. I'm curious for a report. You now have an assistant.
Yeah.
And a little more time where you can reflect upon how that's helped. Share with listeners how's that
going. Oh, man. It's a pretty incredible thing when you double your employees.
Oh, yeah.
Farmland Trust has been a one-person show for a long time, and to have brought on a full-time lands coordinator has just had a significant impact. Phoebe started November 1st. We're still in her kind of 90-day probation period, you know, figuring out all of her tasks, et cetera. But the service that we're able to provide our producers and interested landowners has doubled. And I've got a board meeting tonight, but we're going to make some final decisions on the announcement of a second position.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we... you might recall that the Matsu Health Foundation awarded us these funds for capacity building. And Phoebe was the first hire out of those funds. And we also wrote in a half-time second position. And the board has been considering whether we should make that a full-time position, three-quarter, half-time. But I think we've landed on just what we need to do. And the board will make some final decisions tonight. And then I would say within the next week, look for an announcement on the Farmland Trust page about another position opening, which again will just continue to allow us to serve more producers and landowners, connect more folks to land that's available, and hopefully protect more acres. Right? That's what we're here to do. Save the soil.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right. Last comments for listeners before we finish.
Well, can I turn it around on you really quick and do my quick questions on you?
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right. How long have you been in radio, Mike?
Well, started with this process 13 years ago, and we've been on the air for 10.
Awesome. Okay, 10 years. Did you have a mentor going in?
Yes. There were a couple of people who had greater experience that worked with us.
Okay.
And that was important. And it was important also that they said, okay, now go try flying.
Sure.
Because once you had to, as you understand, once you have to go out there and say ride the bike by yourself,
yeah,
it's a different experience.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. If you weren't doing this form of public radio in Alaska, where would you do it?
Well, I like either California or Hawaii.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you a warm weather guy like me?
Well, I just think of those two places. I had good experiences in both,
okay,
and I know that community radio is alive and well in both places.
Sure.
So if for whatever reason I had to leave, I could see either one.
Yeah.
Myself. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of framed around if you had to do this work somewhere else. Where is your favorite place to travel for pleasure? Is it also just California or Hawaii, or you'd like to go somewhere else when you're just having fun?
Well, we have a connection to my wife's mother in Florida, so we get a chance to go there and go. I would say beneath the idea that Florida is a certain way, because once you go, as you know, you go,
yeah,
anywhere.
Yeah.
There's this image that's sometimes portrayed,
right?
And yet there are a lot of people that live in a lot of places that are very nice.
Yeah.
I've lived in Europe, so my desires are constrained by looking at the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
And also by the reality that the many places that you might want to go, very nice places, Denmark, for example,
yeah,
or other places, are restricted in travel.
Sure.
So ask me this question
yeah, post-pandemic,
in the summer when hopefully this thing has wound down a bit further.
Yeah. I got to go to Florida in 2009, and what shocked me, it's like the breeding horse capital of the United States.
Oh,
there's,
yes,
more horses there. You think it's Kentucky, right? You think it's where the Kentucky Derby is, or I don't know. But and tomatoes. It's like it's the tomato capital, I think, of the world. But that's what I remember about visiting Florida. Final question. Favorite Alaska-grown thing to eat this time of year?
This time of year?
Yeah, it's getting a little...
Whoa. At this time of year, we drink Alaska milk.
Yeah, yep.
And I would say, there are still a few potatoes and carrots available.
there are, yep.
But that's,
yep,
where I'd go. Yeah,
okay.
Alaska milk,
so much better.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I don't drink milk, but when I do, it's only Alaska grown. All right. Thanks, Mike. It's been a pleasure chatting with you for Ag Matters Radio.
All right. Take care now.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.